Today's episode is an interview with Dr. Michelle Gordon, founder of the Menopause Movement. And she is so interesting. Her backstory is crazy. You name it, she's done it. So we talk about a lot, and I so appreciate her openness and vulnerability. She bears all, if you will. She is basically a surgeon turned entrepreneur. And she has an amazing program that helps women who are suffering from menopause. But she talks about her journey from a very young child to where she is today. She talks about being gay. She talks about being an atheist. She talks about being the mother of a very sick child. She talks about going to college, to medical school at the late age of 31, I think is when she went. She talks about waking up at age 49, 50, miserable with menopause and very unhappy in what she's doing in her profession. And she opens up about how she figured out through learning about limiting beliefs and mindset that she ended up where she was at midlife because of a comment and an experience that she had from a very young age. And that happens to many of us. So I think this is an amazing and very interesting and educational, I will say, episode about Michelle's life. And you really learn who she is and what her purpose that she's now living is. And it's so beautiful, such a beautiful interview. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to the interview.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me a person who has been a biz buddy for about 2 years now. We met at an online event, Dr. Michelle Gordon. Welcome, Michelle.
Oh, hi, thanks. Thanks for having me, Laurie.
Yes. And she's got a great voice. So I'm excited to just sit here and listen to her, first of all. And she's got an amazing community she's built. And she knows about menopause because she is 56. Yeah. So we can talk all day long about that. Because actually, I was at the gynecologist yesterday. So I had not been for a while because of COVID. But I love Michelle's story because she is a surgeon. I believe a retired surgeon now, who has moved into the online space to build her business. And she has a really great backstory. And I can't wait to dig in to learn more about her because a lot of her backstory I was just learning about in the pre-interview. And so, yes. So let's, you know, tell us about you and who you are and, you know, what kind of got you started into the whole online space.
Right on. So I'm Dr. Michelle Gordon, and it was, I would say, 2014. I was looking for a solution. I'd gone to some like personal development conferences and trying to find myself. And I built this practice, this surgical practice that was meeting my financial needs. But I kept thinking, is there something else? This is not, you know, there's just, it was, it just never felt like I was in the right, doing the right thing. And I felt like I was being called to do something more. And as menopause started to kind of rear her ugly head with me, I gained about 50 pounds and I started really just disliking the body I was in, the thoughts I was having, all of these things about myself. It was just really beating down on myself. And I had so much, just my low self-esteem. I was just really down and low. So I'd beat, I'd eaten myself into a frenzy, I guess. But I also, I was always thinking about food. I mean, it was crazy. I was craving food and I had no idea why I felt like that. And then out of the blue, I would feel like I was embarrassed. Like these flushes would come up and felt like how it felt when I was a kid and I didn't know what was going on. So I'm like, okay. So I put two and two together. I'm like, okay, this must be menopause. And I'm like, well, if it's this disruptive, why didn't I know about it?
Yeah. I mean, so you were like 49, 50. So you were just
It was average age of menopause is 51. And so as a surgeon, that's a high stakes profession. That's a high, high performance profession. Whenever you open somebody up, you've got their lives lives in your hands. And so it's a really high stakes profession. And what was happening is I was having trouble recalling certain things like names of arteries or names of medications that I prescribed all the time. And then I wasn't sleeping. I was waking up with racing thoughts and I just started putting it all together. And so I have lots of access to doctors because I'm a doctor. And so my friends are doctors. My wife is a doctor. And I said, what's going on? And she said, that's probably a menopause. You got to suffer through it. And I was like, what? And then I went to my friend who's a gynecologist and she said, yeah, it's menopause. You got to suffer through it. You want the patch? And I was like, ugh. So I tried some bioidentical hormones and I got a period. I was like,
I know that's the one good thing about menopause. I don't miss that one bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is I had such premenstrual pain, I had been on the pill for years, just a continuous pill. And I started worrying about my weight gain. And so I stopped the pill suddenly and I got a huge fibroid. So the fibroid went all the way up to my sternum. I mean, it took up my whole abdomen and I ended up I didn't have to have surgery. Thank God. I just had a uterine artery ablation. But before that, of course, I had to have an endometrial biopsy. And if you've given birth, you kind of know what that feels like because, having a baby and uterine contractions and all those things, they really hurt. But man, when somebody takes a stylet and scrapes the inside of your womb, man, that's pain.
Like yeah. I had one probably like 3 years ago and I fainted. I'm a fainter. Fainted. I was like,
I just,
that's why it's a good way to like get people to stop doing what they're doing. I found.
I don't think I've ever fainted, but So that was fun. So I had that done but I was still like, I was like, well, is this menopause? What is this? And so since my colleagues couldn't tell me anything, I was like, I'm smart. I can read journals. And so I went to Google and I was like, well, maybe somebody's got a course because I'm a lifetime learner. And I was like, well, maybe there's a course I can buy. And so I started searching the internet for courses and I couldn't find any. And as a matter of fact, all of the information on Google was like disjointed and weird and it didn't make any sense. And there was no framework. And so I started reading scholarly articles. I started reading nutrition textbooks. I started reading exercise physiology textbooks. And I started and I read endocrinology books. And I started understanding, I made myself a menopause expert to understand what was happening with me. And then what I did was I created kind of like an experiment with myself. And I just wrote down the things that I was doing that worked and I threw away the things that weren't working. And I put it in a framework and it's called the Menno system and it worked for me. And not only did I lose 50 pounds, started sleeping through the night and the symptoms just stopped running my life.
And was that brain fog that you were experiencing? Like the forgetting stuff?
That's brain fog. And that's related to a lot of things. A lot of it has to do with lack of sleep. And lack of
I had hot flashes that were keeping me, waking up multiple times a night.
Yeah. And hot flashes have to do a lot with diet. And so that's why I spent so much time on nutrition and.
Yeah. Red wine gave me them. I figured
red wine
out.
And chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The favorite things that,
So I read some really great books and I kind of put it all together and I started understanding that fat's not the enemy. And I started really understanding the role seed oils play in, in our lack of nutrition and the diabetes epidemic. And so if anybody gets anything from this podcast, it is don't eat seed oils. And those are canola, corn, cottonseed, safflower, soy, and sunflower. And if you have those in your life, get rid of them right now because they're poison.
Now, isn't there an avocado oil?
Is avocado oil is great. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because I think I have a new salad dressing that has that in it.
Yeah. It has a high smoke point. So you can like fry in it if you want to. Peanut oil is also okay. So the rule of thumb that I learned from Dr. Kate Shanahan, and she wrote a couple of books that are pretty popular. One is called Deep Nutrition and the other is The Fat Burn Fix. And actually I had her on my podcast, the Menopause Movement podcast, not too long ago. So that was pretty awesome.
Exciting. Full circle.
Yeah. So I reached out to her. I said, listen, your work has changed my life and the life of my students. And so I'd love to have you on the podcast. But anyway, so the rule of thumb is nature doesn't make bad fats. And, you know, if you're eating things like Crisco was manufactured from a side, you know, like a byproduct of other industries, you know, corn oil, corn syrup.
Manufactured, manufactured, not natural, right?
Yeah. And that's, so they go through this process where part of it is they're solid like a plastic. And then they turn it so it's not, you know, it's all chemical manipulation. But butter just, you know, comes out as butter. Now, there are some arguments about the milk protein casein and what it can do to tumors in our body and things like that. So if you don't like milk, you know, I'm plus minus dairy, dairy, perfect food for a baby cow, fermented dairy. Maybe it's better for us and okay. But when it comes to starting to talk about like dairy, then there's a lot of belief that gets thrown in. So I try to steer away from that. But if you just stay with the premise that nature doesn't make bad fats, you can look at palm oil, avocado.
Nuts are good.
Most nut oils, but you'd have to be careful because you don't want to.
I'm talking about just nuts though.
Nuts too. But you want to be careful with like cooking with like a low smoke point oil, like a sesame oil, because they'll break down and then they become toxic. But the biggest issue with seed oils is that, you know, the seed oils, the reason why they're so ubiquitous or everywhere is because they're odorless, tasteless, and cheap. And so every time you go to get French fries at a fast food restaurant, except for Five Guys, they're going to be coated in this oil. And over time, so because your body needs fats to build our hormones, fats are the building block of hormones. When you're giving your body these crappy fats, then it's going to make your menopause much worse because you're going to have crappy fats to build your hormones from. And I've put that all together just over the last few years.
Yeah. And so you're clearly very knowledgeable and you have your own personal experience, which, you know, oftentimes, and you and I have learned this through our work and in the whole mindset space, but, you know, we follow the path because that's meant to be our future usually, right?
Sure.
So you have to go through the lessons first before you can be a giver of what your lessons were that will help other people.
Without question.
And so you've gotten into a lot of the mindset work. Yeah. And we were talking about how we met 2 years ago and I feel like me too, you know, we've both changed so much as we explored more deeply into our beliefs and what's limited us in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly when we get to midlife and we feel like we're still searching, you know, we even have more work to do because there's so much past there that is coming with us. Yeah. So I would love to know, because you talk about all these symptoms, how much of it do you think was menopause versus how much of it was being misaligned? Like that you were forcing this, you know, round peg in a square hole, if you will.
Yeah. So that's a great question. And it's hard to say because menopause is such an opportunity to make it, you know, make this the best time of your life. I mean, like you make the rest your best, right? And we have this opportunity in this, during this disruption to really rethink what's important to us. And through my life, I've had many opportunities and many disruptions. My son was, you know, really ill as a child, as a 21-month-old. He had cancer. And that was a disruption where I was able to just quit my job and focus on him. And then I went into medical school. And
was that because of your son being ill? Because you started at 30, I think.
I started at 31. Yeah. So 31, I had always, wow. So I had this, well, do you want to go into that?
Yeah, I want you to go, okay. Yeah, go back so, in your whole all right. back, like when you were 12.
So, well, let's go back to, so when I was a little girl, and I tell this story a lot, so if you've heard it before, then I apologize. But so I was a little girl and my mother, you know, of course I'm a little girl, I want to please my mom. And there was a time when we were doing a guided meditation actually with one of our mentors, and this story came back to me and I was like, oh, that's why I haven't made any money online. And it was so poignant to me. And so like I'd been trying to make money online for several years. And I was like, you know, why do I keep sabotaging myself? What the heck's going on here? And so
successful, like me too, you know, vice president, six figures, you know, lots of, you know, everything success in that space. Well, and then you kind of transfer everything to online. You're like,
why haven't I made multiple seven figures already?
The best teacher. And that's,
well, but it's really funny because my surgical practice was multiple seven figures. And so I was like, well, I know how to run a business. Let's just move this on. But it's a very different sort of business. And it requires a lot of persistence because obviously if it were easy, everyone would be successful at it. But getting back to the story. So at 5 years old, I had this memory of myself at 5 years old. My mom had two brothers who were doctors. One was her brother, one was her brother-in-law. And she made some comment like, those guys are rich. They're doctors. They're rich. And so my five-year-old brain translated that into, please your mom, become a doctor, make money. The only way you can make money is to be a doctor. And it's really interesting because I didn't enter medical school until I was 31. I had gotten married, gone to college. My son had been sick, broken up with my husband.
What'd you study in college?
Biology and physical chemistry. Mm-hmm. A lot of STEM. So I did community college first because I was kind of a slacker in high school. And then, you know, I like high scored everything in community college. And then I went to this small school of science and engineering called Harvey Mudd College. And that's in Southern California. They compete with Caltech and MIT for students. So I transferred in there. And I'm still probably the only woman to ever have a baby while a student at that school. It's a really tough school. And so my son, you know, I took a job. I was working in IT in Los Angeles. And I took this job. And then my son like stopped walking, eating and drinking. And we got him diagnosed with this really rare form of leukemia that was completely in his central nervous system. Got him treated. He got better. My marriage broke up. Thank God. And I started, you know, and I had started thinking that I had to go to medical school. I was like, yeah, I was working, but I couldn't hold down a job because I had to take care of this sick kid. And I just had to miss a lot of work. And you know, that was before the days of work from home, right? This was in the 90s. Yeah.
But I wouldn't think being a surgeon would meet those needs because that's something
I wasn't a surgeon then, right? I was thinking about medical school. So I was in my 20s.
Oh, okay. Going to 20s. School. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, so the thing is that, so this program was running from my five-year-old self up until, mm-hmm. you know, through my marriage and through the breakup of my marriage. And I just kept thinking that if I could be a doctor, I could make a lot of money. If I can be a doctor, I can make a lot of money. And so, you know, long story short, I became a doctor. I made a lot of money and it wasn't fulfilling.
Yes. You know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And it just, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it is really the way that healthcare is in America. You know, if a doctor makes a mistake, the doctor is demonized. You know, if a doctor wants something done, the gateways to getting something done is through for-profit insurance companies. And before the 70s, insurance companies weren't for profit and everything was different. And so it's really just changed. It's changed the whole scope. And with COVID, when COVID hit, and I was on the front lines of that here in New York, and seeing people die every single day and seeing what was happening and, you know, everyone with COVID needing to be put on their bellies and needing to be vented and needing dialysis. And I mean, I was putting in, you know, 10, 15 central lines and hemodialysis catheters a day. And I was coming home, stripping down in the garage. And I was like, I don't want this life. And I said, you know, I've saved some money. I know my online business will work because I, you know, there's just so many women who don't know what's happening. This menopause is so disruptive. And I've also like seen this programming, and this programming no longer works. I mean, I can make money anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing money as a source, you know, as just an energy and mm-hmm. more being in alignment with who I'm supposed to be rather than like trading my time for money. And so I trusted the universe to help me put together a plan, and I burned my ships because I let my malpractice go.
Yeah. You burned your ships.
So that was back in July of 2020. And
I just recently read that story again, because I've heard the quote, but I didn't know the story behind it. And I thought that was very interesting. So, I don't think you were in the hot seat group that I was in the last time we were at the live EBD event, but I have made that decision at that event to quit my corporate job finally for good. And the thing that came up for me, and I don't know if this came up for you, but I realized through, I mean, this was like a 3-day processing of, I need to do this. Oh, I'm scared. Oh, I can't. What's going to happen? My world's going to fall apart if I leave this corporate job that's been my security blanket. And what came up finally was, what message am I sending to the universe? Like, I'm telling the universe that I doubt my path. And that's, And by jumping and knowing the net's going to be there,
right,
that is, I'm saying, I'm putting a stake in the ground, and I'm saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm meant to do. And I am not afraid. And that's what you did.
I mean, the fears still come up.
Fear
is, Mother Teresa, I think, said it best, you know, you're going to feel certain things, but you got to do it anyway. And so the thing about fear is it's normal to, you know, have self-doubt and fear, but action is the thing that will take the fear away. I mean, I've found that the more I put action onto things, the better it is, you know, the more I take action. And for me, what's happened with my business is we've completely, you know, over the last 6 months, we've just completely broken it and rebuilt it. And it's super exciting because we've got several offers that are not only, you know, that are going to change women's lives, but they're affordable. And so, you know, we're not trying to break the bank. We're not trying, you know, it's not like this weird, you know, coaching thing, but our first thing starts at under $30.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah. Okay. And so let's go back to, cause I love the whole story thing. I'm just really, cause that's what people like to hear. They want to,
I think,
cause that's where they emotionally connect. So go back to, cause you mentioned your wife. Mm-hmm. So you are gay. And so I want to know how that ties into you discovering yourself. Did you have, you know, like you said, you came out at a young age. Like,
I did. I mean, I knew that I had attraction. Actually, I was probably younger than that. I had attraction. So when I was a little girl, my mom put me in ballet and we lived next, you know, we had a group of friends together and there was a girl, Angela. And Angela, if you're watching this, I've already told you this before, but I used to think that Angela and I were going to grow up and get married. Aww. And I was, you know, 5 or 6 and, you know, we went our separate ways and then Facebook reconnected us. And I remember when I reconnected with her, I felt so like, because I had always loved her. And I still have like quite a fondness for her now in a, you know, obviously in a more platonic way. And I can't say that it wasn't platonic when I was a child, because I didn't know anything about sex when I was, you know, 6 years old, 7 years old, but I used to say, you know, well, when Angela and I grow up, we're going to grow up and get married. We're going to be married. And it just was felt completely normal to me.
Yeah. And do you think there's like a soul connection there? I mean, there's gotta be some kind of a connection that I think goes deeper than
perhaps. I mean, you know, we went very, very different paths, as early as junior high. Mm-hmm. So, and we just really never really reconnected until I reached out to her on Facebook. And then we took a trip. She lives in Seattle area and took a trip to Seattle. My brother lives there and we just hung out and we just talked. We talked about, you know, being a kid together and it was really nice to reconnect with her. And so that always felt normal. And then I remember like in the 70s, maybe, there was Time Magazine, and it was all about like the military and the woman who was trying to keep her position with the military because, you know, she was married to a woman or she was with a woman or something. And the military tried to, you know, they like stripped her of rank and stuff. So I remember that in Time Magazine and thinking, oh, that's me. Interesting.
Hmm.
But I still like boys. So, and so I would date boys and it was, I mean, but I come also, you know, to kind of, and there's not an overshare, but just to kind of give a little more background. I mean, I was really brutally sexually assaulted as a child repeatedly. And so, you know, it's hard to say chicken and egg, right? You know, maybe I just found more, you know, girls more safe.
And was that, you said repeated? Was that just a
yeah,
one
it was
time?
Like, it was, no, it was incest. It was incest. Oh, wow. And yeah, so a lot of things and, you know, not, this is not to, I'm, you know, I've dealt with it and these are things that just happened. And for me, if it hadn't happened, I wouldn't be who I am. And so you know, I've dealt with it and I'm okay with it. You know, I had some issues as a child, as a teenager, I ran away from home and, you know, I've lived a lot of adversity, you know, and I've had a lot of resilience. And I've learned the meaning of resilience throughout my life because, you know, I was in a, I ran away from home and then I lived in foster care. And I mean, I've been, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stories. You know, I moved.
Well, 15. Then you said you like, what I thought was really interesting, because that could screw with your mind is that, and I don't know if it's because your mom found Jesus, but you found Jesus.
Oh yeah. And so,
then, and then that can like, yeah, they don't really, Jesus isn't really, or the people who follow Jesus aren't real accepting of.
Right. Yeah. So I grew up in Southeastern Washington State and in the town that I grew up, there's a church on every corner. And so I was raised Catholic. My mom was Catholic and there definitely had to have been a priest involved in some of my molestation. Cause I had a recurring dream of a guy in a black suit who came and killed my whole family, except for me. And I hid by it next door to the neighbor's tree. And for me, I never put that all together. It was this recurring dream for the longest time. And I didn't put it together actually until I saw the movie about the priests. And I thought, oh, probably there was a priest involved too. So there was just a lot of like weird sexual stuff in my family and then, you know, growing up and whatever. I mean, that it's just what happened.
Yeah.
We live in a patriarchy and especially back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, anything female was fodder for a male, you know, for male sexuality, at least by my experience. I think we've come a little bit further away, but we still get catcalls.
Yeah.
So
I was watching, my husband loves to watch Forensic Files, and I was watching an episode last night and it just kind of like struck me because I think it happens more than we realize.
That's very common.
Know, it really does. And I think there are memories that some are just like people have blocked out that they don't.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is that, I mean, it's, you know, probably closer to 1 in 3 women in America or girls have been abused in some fashion. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that there's the whole issue of victim shaming and belief, you know, not believing that they're telling the truth. And so when I remembered about, you know, I have one of my older brothers who's now passed away, so I feel free to talk about it. Was the culprit with me. And when I came out and told my family about it when I was like 15, nobody believed me. And that's when I ran away. I was like, well, nobody's going to believe me. And so then I went, you know, went through the foster care and moved like 15 times in a year. And it was,
that happened to my cousin. She had a hypno, cause she was having trouble with relationships. She was not like, and she was not, you know, she's never been married. She's never been married. She ended up having a son through artificial insemination, and she's heterosexual, but every relationship that she would have would fail for some reason. And so she went to get help on it. And it came up that her uncle had sexually abused her, and it split the family because everybody thought she was lying. She had been coerced. And then my aunt said, I always had this weird feeling. And it was like, yes, validation finally.
Right.
That's very hard. Very hard.
And it's hard. I mean, I think my mom knew things were going on, but she didn't, you know, she was young. I mean, she was really young when she had her first child, and she had been abused as a, youngster too, by a stepbrother who said he was in love with her, and just a lot of, it was not a stepbrother, it was like a half brother. So just a lot of real weird incest stuff in my family. And it's, you know, my father admitted to having sex with his sister and he just thought it was normal. And just, so a lot of really weird shit that people just turn their heads because that's normal.
You know, what's interesting is I had somebody recently on the podcast, and it hasn't aired yet, but it'll air soon, is about ancestral patterns and how you carry the patterns forward. And that's very interesting. It sounds like, you know, a lot in your family, but I wonder how far back that goes.
Yeah. So this kind of ties back to going into Christianity, because I really felt like Christianity was going to be the answer for me. You know, like this whole, I wanted to break the sins of the father. I was like, I'm not going to carry this forward. Mm-hmm. So Christianity served me well. I won't say it didn't. In throughout Christianity, I learned a lot about myself. And so I went in and, you know, the first thing they said was, you can't be gay, kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. And I went and I did a whole like ex-gay thing in Southern, I moved to Southern California, specifically so that I could go through this program. And, you know, I ended up getting married and all these things. And I wouldn't say that I didn't have a meaningful relationship with my husband before the relationship died. And I wouldn't say that we didn't have sexual, you know, connection, because we did, we had a son together, but I just realized at the end of that relationship that, you know, that probably wasn't me. And
feel when you got married? Like, so I'm heterosexual, but when I got married to my first husband, I felt like I was making a mistake. Because I was in love with somebody else. And I say it's kind of like being gay, I think, even though I'm not gay. It's like, you know, there's something wrong when you're walking down that aisle. And I was just wondering if you had any of those.
It's hard to say, because like my first lover, who was a woman, was 20 years older than me. The first significant lover who was a woman, 20 years older than me. And I had this kind of epiphany while we were together, and I was like 20 or something. And the thought that I had, or the story I chose to tell myself, was I'm doing things with her that I should be doing with my husband. And so, you know, I ended up ending that relationship and going and doing this, this whole like ex-gay.
Were you married at the time?
No.
Relationship? Oh, so you were thinking this was,
I was like 20. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So okay. My future husband. Yeah. It wasn't an affair. Yeah. This is
so
like,
maybe logic brain was telling you to do. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
And so then I went through that whole program, and I have to say that there was, I was really dedicated to that program. And
so is it like kind of an Alcoholics Anonymous, but you're fixing your gayness, or?
No, it wasn't like that. It was a lot of education, and it was really a guy. I mean, just like we do, right? We go through something and we show others how to do what we did if they want it bad enough, right? That's it's the shortcut. And so it was a guy who had made it through himself, married to a woman very happily, 4 children, you know, just had chosen to not be gay anymore, which is certainly, you know, I suppose possible for some people, although I do think that sexuality is fixed at birth.
Yeah, I agree.
But, or, you know, somebody like me who I mean, you know, I'm really probably pansexual or bisexual if I were to look at it. I mean, I'm married to a woman and I'm dedicated to her and I'm faithful to her and all that. So,
yeah, you know. I heard this once and it's so true. It sounds like to me is there's like a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And extreme heterosexual, extreme homosexual. And then you're on this, it's a linear, and some people are in the middle and some people lean one way or lean the other. And I thought that was a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So during this program, I learned a couple of things. I had so much bitterness about my sexual abuse, and I learned that forgiveness was for me.
Yeah.
And you don't need God to forgive. You just have to let things go and realize that there's a lesson everywhere. And so that was really, really good for me at that age. I was 21. And I realized that when I forgive, I release that person from having control in my life. And I was able to then walk into my power. And that was helpful. That was helpful for when my marriage broke up, and that, because I married him and I was really upset we broke up. And I really hoped that God would perform a miracle and get us back together. that wasn't in God's plan.
Yeah.
And so then throughout medical school, and, you know, if we're going to talk about spirituality, you know, after my marriage broke up, I was never unfaithful to him. I was, you know, I stayed faithful, and I, you know, I was like, well, I guess I'll go back to women and dated some women.
Well, yeah, the dating pool is open, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem is that I kept on getting into relationships that, you know, where I was being yelled at or abused or whatever. And it wasn't until I met Valerie, my current wife, and things were just easy and it didn't hurt at all. You know, we just had to work through things.
Yeah. And how long have you been together?
Since 2005.
Okay. So this is before your transition into the space you're
right,
in now.
We met right when I finished my residency, and we got together pretty quick after that, and we've been together ever since. And so, yeah, we got married in 2013.
The real life version of Grey's Anatomy.
I suppose. I mean, you know, so yeah, so that was really interesting. I mean, in life, right? I mean, if you want to look at life, there's ways to look at life. Life is a series of self-discovery, and I truly believe that we're here as a spirit. We are, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. We chose to come here to have this experience, and we're going to go back to spirit when we're done.
Yep.
And so we are on, I believe really strongly that we are on a spiritual journey. And so for me, part of my spiritual journey involved atheism. And for the longest time, I only believed in science. And when my son got sick with cancer, even though I thought I was, you know, giving him everything, the right things to give him, when my son got sick with cancer, I was really upset. And I was a vegetarian at the time, and I was like, well, okay, if this little perfect baby can get cancer, then I can eat whatever the hell I want. And I moved back to eating meat. And then with the extremism in the church about gayness. When you look at the Bible, when you look at the words of Jesus as they're recorded by the men who wrote them several years after he died, Jesus never passed judgment on gay people. Mm. Never once.
Yeah.
Jesus just said, love people. Mm-hmm. The kingdom of God is within you. Mm-hmm. And so as I started back into trying to have a high performance lifestyle, I realized I had to meditate. I realized that meditation was crucial to focus. And I recently read a book that said, for every minute you meditate, you get 9 minutes back in your day.
Wow.
Now, of course that's a law of diminishing returns, right? So you're not going to get 9 minutes back, but it's just really crucial to train your brain. And so as I learned that, I ended up back on a spiritual journey, and I read this book called Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And when I read that book, the whole Jesus narrative made sense to me because he talks about all these things that were miraculous in the Jesus sense. And he's
non-scientific, I presume, that no, they couldn't be like
yeah,
explained
no,
just, through any other.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Some supernatural type stuff. But, you know, I mean, miracles are different. Miracles are, you know, miracles could just be the water I'm drinking. I mean, a miracle is a perception. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like understanding spirituality, reading this book made sense to me. And it just made the Jesus narrative make sense to me. And then some thoughts about where Jesus was between the ages of 13 and 30 when he showed up back in Jerusalem, because there's a big gap in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. And there's some evidence that he was actually in India learning how to become a yogi, which makes everything make sense to me. And I'm like, okay. And then one of the lines in Yogananda's book is, you know, Jesus was using Kriya Yoga or something like it, because that's the scientific way to get to God. And he talks about, you know, this special breathing technique called Kriya that helps you to get in touch with that part of you that is already in touch with God. Hmm. And it all just made sense to me. And so I started meditating regularly, and I started understanding that there is something greater, and it helped me on my mission.
That's great. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I mean, we'll put the link to that book in the show notes.
Yeah. It's a fantastic book. It's still in print. And that's not to say, like, if if you're somebody who doesn't want to believe in spirituality, that's fine. There's no judgment there. You can still get the benefits of meditation by just sitting still and focusing on your breath. If you're somebody who really believes that Jesus is the only way to God, that's fine too. Because
people say praying is their meditation. So
yeah. That's fine too. Or if, mm-hmm. you know, personally, my belief is that all roads lead to the same God. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter which religion you choose to believe in, all roads lead to the same God. Mm-hmm. And that simplifies it for me. And I'm all about simplification.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's just stepping back for a minute and thinking about what we've talked about for the last, you know, 30, 40 minutes. It's like quite a life, quite a life wrapped into one 56-year-old, you know, person body. Yeah. So,
I feel like I'm just getting started.
I know.
I feel like I'm finally getting, you know, youth is wasted on the young, and I really feel like I'm finally kind of moving into my life's purpose, and I'm going to be able to leave a legacy and help, you know, the whole idea is to, you know, the menopause movement exists to ease the suffering of women who are going through menopause. That is why we're here. And what we don't want is to, you know, we don't exist for people to come and complain about menopause. We actually show you a way through it so that menopause, you know, managing your menopause doesn't feel like a full-time job. And that is like really what's important. So we offer world-class transformational education to
That's great. So tell me what you've learned most through this whole entrepreneurial journey that you've taken. And I would like to say too, and give you great kudos, and a lot of people do this, right? Is you juggled both for a long time.
I did.
And your heart's always been in this online space.
Yeah. So I think one of the main things I learned was that I have to pay attention to my feelings when I'm interacting with somebody. And I learned this as a business owner first, that when you feel like you need to let somebody go, you got to let them go, because they're just going to continue to drag you down. And if somebody doesn't fit, they just don't fit. And that's okay, because you're going to free them up to do something better for them, for themselves. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to hold on to them in a resentful way. And so that was,
and I guess you're speaking to not only a, like an employee, but potentially a student.
Anybody. that, you know, so if I'm
acquaintance,
if you're spending, you know, if I'm waking up and you're in my head more than a couple of days in a row, probably it's time to let you out of my life.
Yes. So
you know,
good.
Unless I'm falling in love with you, which is a completely different story, but
that feels good.
It's been a long time since I've done that. So So I've learned a lot about love from my wife, actually. And the fact that love is a lot of acceptance, and there's compromise involved there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be painful. It doesn't have to feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
All the time.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And, you know, I'm reading this new book, and I ordered it because I was researching abundance, and it's called Simple Abundance. And it's every day, it's a little story of, I didn't even realize it was a 365 thing. And it is so powerful in the simplicity of what love is, because that's one of the things is about love and the simplicity of it, and that we neglect loving ourselves more than, you know, and especially women do that.
Yeah. So we start, I think, at about age 2, we start having separation, right, from our parents, the people that are supposed to be the ones that care for us the most, and we start telling ourselves stories about why that happened. And because I think there's a couple things here. I think because of the narrative that our parents are saying inside their heads, because of the narrative that we're bombarded with through the media, loving yourself is not something that we're ever taught. And we're taught that you have to, you know, girls are, you know, what is it we're supposed to do? We're supposed to,
We're supposed to take care of other people, nurture and submit.
And when the boys hit us, it means they like us, right?
Oh, yes. Good point.
Yeah. And so we're taught that violence is love. And that's not true. first of all. And you know, if you're listening to this and you think that violence is love, then, you know, get some help. But we also don't want to teach our grandchildren now, because most of us have grown children or our children, that, you know, when a boy hits a girl, that that means he likes her, because that's just not acceptable. And we have to, you know, I just never knew about personal space. And so it took me probably until my 40s to really understand my own personal boundaries after my abuse. So I don't remember the point.
Yeah. Well, you just, I asked you about what you've learned, and the love word came up.
Yeah.
And what made me think about it is, I think through this journey that we're on, then as entrepreneurs, you know, we learn to, I think we start out wanting to give, and then we end up learning more about ourselves and loving ourselves because, you know, of such the personal growth work we do.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I think I've learned the most throughout my journey over the last 3 years has been that there are no truths and nothing has meaning other than what I choose to give it.
Yeah.
And that has been so freeing for me, and letting go of outcomes, focusing on process, things like that, that just really, really help to propel any project forward. So, you know, running a team, I really, really enjoy that part of it. The being a leader of a team, I was really worried because I made so many missteps with hiring in the past. And when I finally got a team of people who are really dedicated to this mission and understand why we're here, I mean, the question that everyone asks themselves when they get stuck in my business is, how can I ease the suffering of my clients and my teammates right now?
Yeah,
and that's really where we all come from is, is we're here to ease suffering.
Yeah, which ultimately equals, how can I love deeper and
I mean, it all, you know, and connect better and all those things. But you know, the menopause movement is here to ease suffering, and a lot of women suffer with menopause, and I'll tell you, suffering is an option. It's optional. That's everywhere.
So powerful. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming. And I'm really excited that we finally had this conversation, because we've been talking about doing it for a long time.
Right on.
And it's so funny how that kind of the universe knows when the time is right.
Yeah. And I just want to let your audience know that if you are interested in trying to understand menopause, or you want to know what menopause is all about, right now you can go to menopausemovement.com/hormones. And that is a course that we offer at no charge right now. We're going to be charging for it soon. So you want to make sure you get in there and you can discover all about menopause, the hormones involved, and what to do about it.
All right. We'll put that link in the show notes for you.
Understanding your hormones and managing your menopause.
Alrighty, great. All right. Thanks so much for coming on and talking.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.